Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 350. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Phil Wilson, too.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today? Other than Tim has a cold, and I'm getting over the flu, and Phil's feeling great. So.
And I'm in perfect health. Yes, indeed. Of course, tomorrow, this means tomorrow I'll wake up with, you know, bleeding from every orifice or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
well, anyway. But at least you felt good. You went to, did you go to DevFest?
Yeah, I did. Two of our developers, our Android developers, were presenting on some work we're doing on our upcoming video app. And so I went to see them and make sure that they felt the love. And I enjoy, one of the guys, Steve Peterson, who's one of our Android leads, is just, he's got that sense of humor that is sort of dry and so annoying, it's funny. So it's always good to. It's always good to see Steve present, and then Paul Marino, another Android developer, we're talking about the upcoming video app for BuzzFeed. So, I had a chance to talk to some of the presenters and the promoters of the event, Twin Cities Google Developers Group that puts it together, and including like Stephen Fluen and Lloyd Clidwin and those guys. And they said they had 385 registered for DevFest, which is about, I'd say another 100 from last year. So it's growing. It's a great event. It's very much developer focused, but it's good to see. And I've always admired that group. They put together a good event.
Well, and so, how involved is Google?
Very, very involved. They provide the keynote speaker and they provide resources. And yeah, it's a very much a.
So they're not just Google throwing inspired. It out there and letting local people do it. Okay.
No, I mean, the local guys do most of the work, but it was good to see a lot of the same folks that we've had in past mobile marches and things like that. So, and you've probably seen some of them too, Steve, at IoT Fuse they probably drink wine too, Steve or Tim. So
yeah.
Well attended.
Well, very well attended.
Oh, good.
It was at the Schultz Center there. Schultz Hall
at the University of St. Thomas.
Yeah. Right. So, yep. So where you guys are doing IoT Fuse?
Yes. As a matter of fact,
well, there we go.
Same place.
Yeah. Same place.
Well, Justin Grammons is now teaching there.
Yes, he
about
is.
About Internet of Things. And he's Justin an Grammons, adjunct. For those listening, he's, Recursive Awesome, and then they bought his firm, and Code 42 bought his firm, and he's a co-founder of IoT Fuse with Patrick Delaney and myself, and University of St. Thomas is being very open with respect to embracing the startup community and developers, and
it's really a very great place to be.
So, exactly. So. Well, and then we have mini demo coming up. Go ahead.
Steve, you hinted that Code 42 had Code 42 had bought Recursive Awesome. Actually, they didn't buy Recursive Awesome. They bought the assets of Recursive Awesome, which became HyperIQ. So Recursive Awesome became available again. So Justin has now reopened Recursive Awesome, which I think is one of the best names for a company ever. So it's like, it's great to see, Justin back in doing what he does best, and that's run his own company. So,
yep. Mini demo number 22 is coming up. And that's going to be on this coming Thursday, the 18th. And the presenters are out now. A lot of them I don't know. A couple of them I do. Who's driving? About carpooling and Aurelius, Project Goals. Another one called
Light Jot.
Light Jot. Another one called Twist Jam.
Which interesting is that it's kind of interesting, a music app startup aiming to provide the best experience for guitar tabs, which guitar tabs have become insanely popular on the internet. So it's going to be interesting to see that come together.
And then Homie, about meeting students and alumni from your school, which is, I don't know, vid comment. Why leave a text comment when you can leave a video comment? I think
there's reasons why you wouldn't want to leave a video comment, but
yeah, like you haven't brushed your hair.
Right.
Yeah. So
Gary Busey, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's, there's some interesting startups, so it should be fun to watch.
Yeah. They're streaming it. So you can watch it even if you didn't get the tickets.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I did the donation thing, so I get early tickets. For those of you listening, we've been having some technical difficulties with Skype today, and we've been noticing that some issues.
It's all Phil's fault. It's all Phil's fault.
It's not. Phil, we love you, buddy. But so we're kind of fits and starts here a little bit, but
actually, we've recorded this entire podcast over a 2-day period.
That's right. Yeah, right. Oh, that's about it. But this was a really interesting story that this Twin Cities angel investor group wants to help Vegas startups hit the jackpot. And this is all really
a scratcher, really, isn't it?
Say again?
It's a head scratcher because it implies that there aren't enough investment opportunities here in town. So they're going to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Well, but it's all about the... oh, no, his name just escaped me. The CEO of the company that was focused on Las Vegas technology, building the incubator there, is Zappos CEO Tony Tsai.
Oh, okay.
He invested $350 million of his own fortune into the Las Vegas startup hub. And so, you know, it sounds like things are rolling out there. And maybe that's what this is all about. They didn't say that specifically in the... in the article at all, but makes me wonder if that's really what's happening, is that there's enough startup activity out there that it makes sense to go out and start to throw some money at them.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know either. We'll have to investigate and find out more. So
maybe it's a tight labor market here.
Well,
I mean, that is true. There's there's something that came out earlier this week that SPS Commerce is having a hard time finding people.
Well,
interesting, they're having a hard time finding sales and marketing people, which I find hard to believe in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it seems to be that this is an excuse to me. I mean, there's no way.
I think they're having too much churn, I guess, and they're turning people over too fast.
No, what they're having trouble getting the right kind of sales and marketing person, someone that that's low enough cost. So,
yeah. Well, no. I mean, really, when you're playing in the enterprise space like this, you need somebody who can sell at a high level, can engage teams at various levels, and also knows technology well enough to be able to understand the value proposition all the way through the whole value chain of what they offer. And that's really hard to find. Trust me, because played that game.
But I still think that it's, in this article, they point to, they train their people really well. Well, if you train your people really well, then keep training people, for God's sake. That's the cost of doing business. And I don't necessarily know if, poaching is an issue. I think it's probably more of an attrition issue. People are wooed away because something just ain't right at SPS. So I don't know.
Well, but they did talk about how it's harder to find
marketing people, marketing and salespeople in Minneapolis. They're everywhere. So,
it is relatively easy to find software developers, engineers. I mean, they're everywhere, growing on trees, right?
Not really. No, that's a little tougher. So that's a little tougher. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a challenge of being a big business. You gotta keep that in mind.
I got a tip for you.
What's that? Plastic?
No. I hear that there are really good developers in Ukraine.
Yes, there are.
It's a little war torn, but if the right kind of place in there, it could be just fine.
Well, hey, I tell you what, my former colleague at Lawson Software, we bought his third startup. He's now a professor at the University of Qatar in computer science, Maher Akeem. And when he started up a company in the Bay Area, his fourth company, that's where they found the development group over there, is in the Ukraine, because a Carnegie Mellon computer science PhD Emil Tomas had gone back to the Ukraine to live, and, you know, because he could earn $60,000 a year roughly and, you know, live like he was making $300,000 over here. And Maher said, you know, it's so much better because the people are so much more creative than, you know, if you were to outsource to India, for example. They'll do exactly what you want them to do, but they're not necessarily, you know, creating new apps and so forth and coming up with ideas.
But, I'm happy. I worked with two teams out of the Ukraine. So
really?
There, yeah. Huh.
That's why I said that. Anyway.
So do you have any idea?
She was poking at the bear is what he was trying to do.
Yeah. No. Well, so here's a question for you. There was an article in the Pioneer Press about St. Paul rolling out this parking app. You know, Minneapolis did that, and it's pretty cool. It works great.
And it's a different app,
but who built the app? Do you have any idea, Phil?
No, it's not. It's a firm, just like it's a national firm. They provide the apps for
from out of town. It's Charlotte.
From okay. out of town. Yeah. They do this in a lot of different cities. So it's,
okay.
It's been around for a while. I mean, I suppose it's the less expensive route to go is to, you know, obviously be part of another app rather than build your own app like this. The Twin Cities really needs a single app. I don't know why. You know, it's going to be frustrating to, you know, use a meter in St. Paul and then have to open another app to use a meter in Minneapolis.
I don't think it's a big deal.
It sounds like a pain in the ass for a local developer.
What now?
It sounds like a good opportunity for a local developer.
Well, they put out a, you know, St. Paul or Minneapolis, but, you know, I know put out a, RFP 3 years ago, looking for somebody to build an app, a parking app for them. And, it was an extensive RFP, but, they ended up going with that firm that already had an established project or
I bet a lot of this has to do with the PCI compliance stuff. So there's all sorts of,
good
this point. Issue is probably not trivial. So it can't be like a developer here that, well, it could be, but you'd have to invest a lot into it. So.
Well, I think the Minneapolis parking app I think is great. I use that thing all the time. So,
you know, you mentioned PCI compliance, Tim, and Wells Fargo charges us an extra $25 a month on our merchant account because we're not PCI compliant at the server level, but we use, you know, SSL and we've got a gateway that through authorized.net that does the transaction. So there's nothing ever stored and forwarded on the server. And yet, you know, I went through the seminar and went through the whole process of looking at what it would take to be PCI compliant. It's like going out to buy a car and then having someone say, oh, by the way, you need to buy an entire fleet of cars and hire people that can drive all of them.
You know, you have to buy wheels.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was, you know, we looked at this and I did a back in the envelope and I figured it would cost us $15,000 a year. So that $25 a month isn't bad.
No.
So, yeah, just insane. So that is a big deal with these parking apps.
Paying the fine is just fine.
Yeah.
So guys, the discovery of the gravitational wave.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually has roots here in our own little state.
Yeah.
Yeah, in NorTech, down in Burnsville. First of all, I thought there was no intelligence south of the river, but
no,
I guess that's the case.
Yeah, it's just us hicks out here.
just us goofy folks.
yeah. But NorTech does, what do? They do these computing clusters.
Yeah, supercomputers.
Yeah, so it's basically parallel processing for all this data.
They're the second largest integrator in the country, which is...
Really?
Yeah, which is crazy.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
I didn't either. If you look into the company, so if you go to their website, you'll see stuff like that, and it's interesting.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Interesting.
Don't you wonder how many stealth companies are out there like that?
Oh, that we don't know about?
Yeah, in Twin Cities that are.
I bet there's a lot.
Yeah.
Huh. I'd heard of this before this, but I just thought it was a big story, and you know, they had a nice write up in the Star Tribune. Yeah. So
my question was to you guys, what does the discovery of the gravitational wave, how does this affect me?
Well, it's you should think that Albert Einstein was a brilliant man who is now proven correct on one of his theories.
Thought he was a brilliant man.
So maybe his theory of relativity isn't a bunch of bunk. That's okay. What they're hoping you think.
Well, but also it's a major leap forward in terms of being able to do measurements in the universe.
Okay.
Because now, you know, I'm sure you've heard of redshift, where you can actually look at the shift in the red frequency and of light and determine distance based on redshift. And so now with this, they're going to be able to factor in gravitational redshift. And that's a big deal because now it's going to increase the accuracy of every single measurement that's made in the universe. So that's why, you know, I mean, it's stuff like, you know, people wonder, gee, why did Einstein's theories matter and all of that? Well, we have something called GPS that's there because of understanding general relativity and understanding Einstein's equations. So,
thanks, Steve. I knew you would tell me why it mattered to me.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to put a great, great little video in. It's the best explanation yet I've seen of gravitational waves. I'll put the video in there.
Cool.
And just take a look at it because it's pretty sweet. So anyway,
I have to say that the animation of the two black holes colliding was cool as well.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 I'd like to go see that, you know, fly up there and fly into one of those black holes, see what happens.
There you go.
Be crushed down to the size of an atom.
It could be like your Dave in 2001.
Yeah, or Matthew McConaughey in
whatever
the name of that movie was.
Gravity.
Anyway, Gravity, yeah, thank you. No, that was Sandra Bullock and George Clooney.
That was Sandra Bullock, that was right. That was,
come on, get your space movies right.
I know, what was that? Now it's going to bug me. The Matthew McConaughey movie was what?
Interstellar.
Interstellar, there you that's
go.
It.
There you go.
Thank you.
Got it.
Speaking of cool,
Tim kind of said that like he was mad.
Yeah, well, I've said it three times.
Oh well, couldn't hear it over the gating from.
So did you see Chuck Olson's new video of the St. Paul Winter Carnival?
I thought that was pretty cool. Julio did the write up on that, and I'm really glad that these guys at Visual, Chuck Olson and his partners, that they're actually doing things that are public, because it's going to put them on the map. You know, because it's one thing to go to their website and go, oh, that's kind of cool. And it's quite another to actually, you know, do something from a public event that people will want to see.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. He does such cool stuff.
Indeed. I hope he gets to Rio for the Olympics, because that would be another.
Oh, that'd be killer.
Oh, yeah.
Experiential kind of deal.
Yep.
Chuck's my hero. I just think he just gets to do such really cool stuff. I hope he's making lots of money now.
Well, and you should go to Visual's new site, because they redid their website.
Oh yeah.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Is it very visual?
Good.
Of course it is.
But yeah, it's they did a nice job on it.
Nice. So,
learn a little bit more about them and so forth. So,
cool.
Well, so there were some other top tech stories, and I got to tell you that this one at the top here was one of those most buzzed about.
But in late game here, I didn't even see it.
It was a study that was done of 3 million entries, and it was done on GitHub. And the researchers went in and they looked at all these code submissions, and in so many cases, the choice was the code that was submitted by women, unless the men knew that it was submitted by women, and then they didn't rate it as highly.
All right.
So they looked at 3 million pull requests and found that the code written by women was approved at a higher rate, 78.6%. Than code written by men, 74.6%. but the acceptance dropped dramatically if voters knew that it was women that had submitted the code. So there is gender bias. I mean, it's a pretty clear indication of gender bias. I thought that was really interesting. And then I also wondered, you know, qualitatively, what really comprises better code submission? Was it better documented? Was it just better code overall? I mean, what were the differentiators? So I didn't really look into it too much, but I thought that was a pretty strong story.
We had this discussion, three or four of us at work the other day, two of our women developers and one of the other developers and myself, we had a long discussion about, it's very difficult. It's a passion for me to get more women involved in technology and especially in development and developing products and coding and all those sorts of things. But it's really hard as a man not to see it's really hard for us to see what actually happens to women coders, because they talked about this happening all the time, that there is a bias towards code written by women.
Yeah.
And that male developers just don't think their code is as good, when in actuality, I love this, the fact that this was proven to, yeah, it's better.
Yeah.
So.
It does say that, I put a link in there to the PDF of the study itself. Mm-hmm. And it does say that it hasn't been peer reviewed. So, that's one caveat, people will poke holes in it potentially, but, mm-hmm. It was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go ad nauseum on all the detail, but if you want to anybody wants to just skim it, just take a peek at the PDF and you'll get some of the background on how the study was done and the things that they looked at and so on. So.
There's a quick aside in the article too, that in 2013, a survey of software developers, 11.2% of software developers are women. That's not much. So
no,
we need more female developers. That's all there is to it. If for no other reason than they're better developers. I've always felt like women would be exemplary developers. So anyway.
Well, what I'd like to see is something about, besides
here comes a segue. Ready for it, Tim. Here it is.
No, it's not a segue, but besides math capability and logical thinking, I'd be very interested to know about people with ADD or ADHD, that can't juggle things in the prefrontal cortex very well or keep very many things in the prefrontal cortex and short-term memory. And if anybody with ADD is a coder.
Yeah, there's a lot of coders that have ADD.
Really?
I've seen articles and studies that have pointed out the superior quality of technologists with ADD.
So. Well, I can see technologists, but coders, I know what it's like for me because I've got ADD. But I know what it's like for me when I'm able to hyper-focus. But there are times when all of a sudden I'll go, oh yeah, I got to do this. And I'll go off on some tangent when I'm doing things in WordPress. I'll go off on some tangent and all of a sudden I realize there went an hour.
And usually that's just me calling you with a problem and you have to explain it to me.
That's right. That's right.
That's what that is. It has nothing to do with what you're coding.
Yeah.
So Tim, I'm sucking up your time.
So Tim, you put this in here, on Kickstarter's blog.
First
100,000 funded Kickstarter projects in 100 numbers. What does that mean exactly?
I'm stretching it, I think.
They had, they were trying to fulfill a promise in the title. But I thought what was interesting is that they've funded 100,000 projects.
That's cool.
This concept of crowdfunding didn't exist 10 years ago, and
it didn't exist 7 years ago.
Right, 7 years ago, it didn't exist.
Was Kickstarter the first crowdfunding site?
I don't know. Was Indiegogo before them, or was it Kickstarter?
They were early on, though.
Yeah,
right.
But I think it's just amazing the amount of projects that we're talking the ones that have been successfully funded, not just the ones that started.
These are some really interesting factoids. Highest number of successfully funded projects by a single creator, 94.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It's like, what does this person do? Just sit and create Kickstarter projects? I wonder who that is.
Known as Idea Boy.
Yeah, no kidding. Idea. No kidding.
It's actually Fred and Barney, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. It's like, unbelievable. Hey, here's an idea, Fred. Yeah, it's an incredible number of successfully funded music projects, 22,133. Wow.
Wow.
Highest rank of a Kickstarter funded album on the Billboard 200. Number 7.
So incredible.
Amazing.
Well, is away from the Oscars, and they have 11 films that have been done that have been nominated and one Oscar award winner.
There you go. So I find this very interesting.
Look at number 57, height of Got the Power, Minnesota, a site-specific musical sculpture and soundscape by Bayette Ross Smith, composed of 80 vintage boomboxes, 15 feet was the height. That's kind of a bizarre factoid. I mean, I'm sorry.
It's a cool thing. If you go to the site that's there, it's Tumblr. That's crazy. Where is that? That's in Brooklyn. It's
Brooklyn, yeah.
Got to go to Brooklyn to see someone's art.
All the glued together boxes, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, you might as well. Nobody uses those anymore, so. Huh. Interesting.
That's fun. Thanks for putting that in there. I like
that. Hey, I do what I can. You know, every once in a while, even a blind squirrel, brother.
That's right. That's right. Well, okay, so this is, not going to have a security tip this week, but man.
I knew this was going to make you sit straight up in your bed.
Yeah, UK politicians green light plans to record every citizen's internet history.
Yay!
Oh, man, buy VPN futures.
This is brilliant.
Well,
by VPN futures.
You know, I got to tell you that in all seriousness, going to London, it's just stunning to see the number of cameras there.
Yes.
I mean, I swear to God, I walk in the bathroom sometime and I look around, make sure there's no cameras in there. I mean, they're everywhere, literally. I mean, every part of the street and alleys and everything's covered.
Well, which is interesting because it does put a different spin on how you view this topic. It depends on it. So a culture in the UK, you know, this sort of thing isn't as big a stretch from the privacy standpoint because they've already done a lot of things that you would consider infringing on your privacy. Yeah. A lot of cameras, a lot of tracking, that sort of a thing. Not as much as that we're aware of anyway in the US, but so it does put a different spin on this is because everybody has a different opinion of what privacy is. So is this as big a deal in the UK as it is to us?
Well, but also, you know, we've got this freedom aspect to our constitution that people vigorously defend. And I just look at a couple things. One is, you know, the geography of the United Kingdom is, you know, a fraction of the eastern seaboard of the United States. Plus there's, you know, only 65 million people-ish in the UK. And what do we have? 315 million now? Something like that. Anyway, it's easier for them to get stuff by. And plus, you know, their history as kings who just said off with their heads, you know, they could just do whatever they wanted to do. So it's kind of a different background. And in London's more of a melting pot than even New York, I think. But this is just, I mean, you know, essentially what they're doing is they're going and saying, hey, ISPs, save everything.
Everything.
So, you know, it's
blackmail.
Yeah. Well, and then here at home, the next story is the Internet of Things, an absolute gold mine for Big Brother, admits top U.S. spy.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this last week, too, didn't we? It is really kind of, it's ripe for the picking.
Right. And I put a link to the PDF in there.
Yep.
And
look in context to what he's saying, and he's putting this in the threat matrix. So he's not saying that this is what they're what they're doing at the NSA. And that's the way it's heard by everybody. Is an NSA director is spying on you with Internet of Things. No, he's saying that it could be exploited by other security agencies.
So and it will be.
Looking at you, you know?
There's no question it will be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's one of the things, you know, I went into Best Buy and they've got a whole new connected home, smart home area in the front of the store in Eden Prairie. And I looked at every one of the cameras there and they do not sell one camera that doesn't use a web service. So there aren't any cameras in there that you can directly connect to. And the ones that you directly connect to are pretty geeky. You know, and it's hard because most people have, they don't have fixed IP addresses at home. You know, it's a dynamic IP and you have to go and you have to go to a, like a dynamic DNS service and sign up for that. So you can get a domain name that points at your house. So, you know, if the IP address changes, you can still get into the camera. So it's much geekier, but I would never buy a camera with a web service. That's, you know, the, who knows who's looking at it or capturing it or whatever.
Yeah.
So
interesting stuff.
Yeah. Well, cool thing of the week, boys.
All right.
Okay.
Let's rock and roll. So Tim, you go first, buddy.
This is one that came out a couple of weeks ago and I just haven't got it yet. It's the new Fitbit. It's the Alta, which is their first foray into more of a fashion kind of tracker. It has a OLED screen on it. It's a bit thick for my taste, but I think it's mostly aimed at women. And it has a number of different kinds of band options that you take on and off, similar to the Apple Watch. But it's an interesting design, and it does all the fitness stuff. And it also has, you know, like the integration with the call thing like my Fitbit does. So you get caller ID on it. So it's not a smartwatch, but it's a fitness tracker, but it's one that looks a little bit better than some of their other ones.
Yeah.
It looks good.
What really good. It's doing is really interesting. They have, you know, a range of products that fit different market segments and different types of people. And with that one that they came out with a few weeks ago, the Blaze, which we talked about, they're getting into more of a smartwatchy territory, but they go all the way down to something that's, you know, $50. That's just a dumb tracker.
So, yeah, this is $130, right?
Yeah. Huh. Yep. $129. So I think a lot of people this would appeal to, and it does enough smartwatch kinds of stuff that you know, this there may be some traction. Some people have written though that maybe this is kind of muddling the waters a bit, but we'll see.
Interesting. Phil, what's yours, buddy?
Yes. With our work at BuzzFeed and the work we've done on, you know, launching the BuzzFeed News app, we're always looking at, always aware of the new stuff that comes out of the world of news. Quartz has a new news app that I think is very cool, but also extremely annoying and unfulfilling. But that
so use the BuzzFeed app.
Yeah, definitely.
Those of us that are on Android, we have to use the BuzzFeed app because
that's right.
Hasn't felt it necessary to support the platform.
But it's interesting because it's a new style of news app. It is more of a feed as more of a text messaging screen almost. I mean, it looks identical to what the iOS messaging screen looks like. So basically it just gives you tidbits or headlines of news that's happening, and you can either choose to open that text bubble and find out more about that news article where it's linked to, or you can press a button and it'll move to the next story. There's an insane amount of use of emojis, which I got to tell you that we did started there at BuzzFeed. So we beat them on that then. So, but this was very, very frustrating because I just before we started talking about it, I opened the app and I basically clicked on enough anything else questions to get through 1, 2, 3 stories. And then Quartz told me I was all caught up. I can't possibly be all caught up from the last time I looked at news. So that's the frustrating part, because you cannot scroll through this feed. You only are, you're given bubbles at a, you know, text bubbles at a time where you just ask for it. And yeah, it's kind of unfulfilling, but an interesting concept.
Well, there seemed to be a lot of buzz about the app itself, especially amongst people that are, you know, involved in journalism. I follow a few people, Matthew Ingram and, you know, some others, Jeff Jarvis and so on, that people are kind of buzzing about it a little bit, that they liked certain aspects to it, but it's not for me.
It's honest to God, Steve, it's interesting for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
And then you realize, nah, I don't, well, in my opinion anyway, nah, it's not the way I like. I'd like to have my stuff in a feed. I like to be able to scroll up and down through that feed. I like to see a little bit more context. Tim, when it comes to Android, if it makes it there, I'd love to know what you thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Well, I will.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've reopened the app and I'm still all caught up. It's like, well, no, I'm not. There's got to be more news out there. So.
Yeah. Nice.
It's interesting.
Execution may need some help.
Well,
early days.
So my yes. cool thing of the week is something that I came across. One of the things that is an issue with all of my clients at the beginning when we're doing sites for them is that, you know, they will sometimes go to Google Images and just grab an image. And of course, you know, it's not
you can't
licensed.
Do that.
No, that you can use one of the search tools and find Creative Commons images, but it's kind of a pain and it limits and it doesn't show very good images and so forth. And so I stumbled across a site called visualhunt.com. Okay. And right this moment, they have 354 million plus Creative Commons photos across all kinds of different sites, all these free photo sites and Flickr and you know, Google and everything else. And so you can just, it's just got a search box. And so you put in some concept like, okay, I want images of laptops.
Okay.
And across the top, it gives you your license type, commercial use, non-commercial use, public domain. And then it'll even give you the code that you can stick under the image if you want to do attribution, or if it says you have to do attribution. And then they've got CC0 images, meaning images you can just use without any attribution. And there's 55,000 of those. And so if you're doing blog posts, if you're, creating brochures, you know, whatever, this is great. It's a wonderful, wonderful site to find really good imagery. In fact, I used to spend sometimes, you know, $100 to $150 a month on iStock Photo, which in my opinion has the best stock photos.
Yep. Right.
Almost, I'd say 80% of the imagery we use for clients is Creative Commons now, because there's just so much of it out there.
This is really brilliant.
It's great.
And this is so insanely helpful. I love the concept of, you know, next to the picture, if there is no attribution required, it says no attribution required, but it is appreciated. So at the very least, they're saying, well, you know, you don't have to, but if you feel it's good in your heart, it's in your heart.
Yeah.
Go ahead and put this attribution there.
Yeah. That's if great. You're not a jerk and a dick, please feel free to use this code.
If you're not, Steve Borsch, do this.
That's right.
So what's coming up as far as events? I know that the one thing that I'm going to talk about is Mobile Twin Cities. We've got the Overcoming the Gender Gap in Mobile Tech. And believe me, this article from The Guardian's going to come up. So
good.
There's still some seats available for that because we had to reschedule it from earlier this month because of the snowstorm. So supposed to be much better weather for Tuesday. So hopefully you can join us for that. Of course, many demos coming up as well. Talk to us about IoT Fuse, Steve.
It's coming along quickly. We've got a bunch of sponsors now, and it's going to be an open event, so there won't be a fee to attend. So tickets are going to be tight, but
it's free this year.
Yeah,
Wow.
Yeah, so it's all sponsors, and you know, hats off to Mini Analytics. They've really helped us out a lot. Dan Atkins and his bride Jill Atkins is doing a lot of work for us, and they've just been an awesome partner. So we're very, very pleased with where things are at and where they're headed. And
can you get tickets now?
Not yet. No.
Oh, okay.
No, we're going to get the keynoters solidified and nailed down, and then we'll be rolling things out. But we probably won't roll them out, the tickets, until March. But you can go and sign up for, if you go to iotfuse.com and go to the conference link at the in the top navigation, you can sign up for email updates.
There you go.
And we're probably getting 20 of them a day. So
I just signed up. So, man.
There you go. Good. Well, I guess we'll have to talk about this kind of stuff and more next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
All righty. Take care.